Good afternoon. My name is Jody, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Mace Security International Third Quarter Financial Results Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. John McCann, you may begin your conference.
Thanks, Jody, and thanks to all the participants. Sorry about the difficulty in getting in. The conference call company mentioned to us that they had a mainframe issue that they're working feverishly on to fix. If you can't join, this call will be recorded, and we'll make sure anybody that, when we get the list, has not joined the call, we'll make sure they're available, the recording's available, and also any questions they have. So first, I'll turn it over to Carl for forward-looking statement, and then the only other words is that we did load a PowerPoint presentation in our investor relations section of our website. So, Carl?
Okay. Certain statements and information during this conference call will constitute forward-looking statements and are based on management expectations and information currently in the possession of management. When used during our conference call, the words or phrases will likely result, are expected to, will continue, is anticipated, estimate, projected, and intended to, or similar expressions are intended to identify forward-looking statements. Such statements are subjected to certain risks, known and unknown, and uncertainties, including but not limited to economic conditions, limit of capital resources, and the ability of management to effectively manage the business and integrate acquired businesses. Such factors could materially adversely affect Mace's financial performance. It could cause Mace's actual results for the future periods to differ materially from any opinions or statements expressed during this call. I will now comment on the third quarter and year-to-date financial results, and then I'll turn the call back over to John McCann, our CEO. Third quarter net sales were $2,828,000 compared to $2,706,000 last year, an increase of 112 or 4.5%. Net sales associated with the acquisition were $478,000 for the quarter, with sales reflected in our consumer, tactical, and international sales channels. Consumer channel net sales for the third quarter totaled $2,420,000 compared to $2,391,000 last year, an increase of $29,000 or 1.2%. International channel net sales totaled $219,000 for the quarter compared to $206,000 last year, an increase of $13,000 or 6.3%. This increase is primarily attributed to distribution of animal repellent products in Canada, partially offset by reduced demand in Europe. Tactical channel net sales totaled $145,000 compared to $79,000 for the third quarter last year, an increase of $66,000 or 83.5%. This increase is attributed to new distribution and increased sales to existing customers. Net sales classified as other totaled $44,000 for the third quarter compared to $30,000 last year. Gross profits for the third quarter 2017 totaled $1,293,000 with a 45.7% gross margin compared to $1,166,000 and 43.1% gross margin in 2016. An increase of $127,000 or 10.9%. The increase in gross profit dollars is mainly attributed to the $122,000 increase in sales and better margins. Gross profit margins were 2.6 points higher quarter to quarter. The margin improvement can be attributed to lower freight out expense as the company increased its case pack quantities with some key accounts. We also had favorable overhead absorption as a result of increased production, and this was offset slightly by unfavorable mix. Selling, general, and administrative expenses for the third quarter ended September 30th, 2017, were $942,000 or 33.3% of sales compared to $940,000 or 34.7% of sales in 2016, an increase of $2,000. There's a nice table in our supplemental quarterly report, which we post to the OTCQX, summarizing the change in SG&A, of which I'll highlight the points. Salaries and related employee benefit expenses increased $67,000 for the quarter compared to last year due to the hiring of additional sales personnel. Advertising expense increased about $19,000, primarily related to higher internet advertising expenditures. And then these increases were offset by a $33,000 decrease in commission expense attributed to lower commissionable sales and lower commission rates paid to some of our reps. Other expenses accounted for a decrease of $23,000. Depreciation expense in the 3 months ended September 30th increased $9,000 to $49,000 compared to $40,000 in the 3 months ended September 30th, 2016. And this is due primarily to the March 2017 acquisition of property, plant, and equipment. Operating income for the third quarter 2017 totaled $302,000 compared to $186,000 in the third quarter of 2016, $116,000 or 62.4% improvement due to the factors I just highlighted. Other expense net for the quarter was $106,000 compared to other income net of $18,000 in Q3 of 2016. The $124,000 increase in expense is primarily attributed to amortization of intangible assets associated with the company's March 2017 acquisition, as well as a decrease in investment income due to liquidation of a portion of the company's short-term investments to fund the 2017 acquisition. As a result of the above, the company reported net income of $196,000 for the quarter compared to $250,000 in 2016. EBITDA for the quarter was $351,000 compared to $226,000 in 2016, $125,000 or 55.3% improvement. I'll now highlight some of the 9 months, year-to-date, September 30th, financial information. Year-to-date net sales were $7,048,000 compared to $6,816,000 last year, an increase of $232,000 or 3.4%. Year-to-date net sales associated with the acquisition were $1,289,000, with sales being reflected in our consumer, tactical, and international sales channels. Consumer channel net sales totaled $5,712,000 compared to $5,610,000 last year, an increase of $102,000 or 1.8%. International channel net sales totaled $743,000 compared to $827,000 last year, a decrease of $84,000 or 10.2%. This decrease is primarily attributed to reduced demand in Europe, offset by distribution of the animal repellent products in Canada. Tactical channel net sales for the 9 months ending September 30th, 2017 totaled $505,000 compared to $299,000 last year, an increase of $206,000 or 68.9%. This increase is attributed to new distribution and increased sales to existing customers. Gross profit. Year-to-date 2017 gross profit totaled $2,980,000 with a 42.3% gross margin compared to $2,822,000 and a 41.4% gross margin in 2016, an increase of $158,000 or 5.6%. The increase in gross profit dollars is mainly attributed to the $232,000 increase in sales and slightly higher margins. The margin improvement can be also attributed to the lower freight out expense we've experienced through the year as we increased case quantities with some key accounts. And again, for the year, we're having favorable overhead absorption as a result of increased production. Some comments on selling general administrative expenses. For the 9 months ended were $2,773,000 or 39.3% of sales compared to $2,772,000 or 40.7% of sales in 16, an increase of $1,000. So salaries and related employee benefit expenses increased $133,000 compared to last year due to the hiring of additional sales personnel. Advertising expense increased $25,000 due to higher internet advertising expenditures. Business travel was up and increased $35,000, and that was due to the travel related to acquisitions, increased customer visits, and visits to China to some of our key suppliers. The company also experienced a $20,000 increase in public company expenses due to the move from the pink sheets to the OTCQX. And then these increases were offset by a $78,000 decrease in commission expense attributed to lower commissionable sales. And we also had a $125,000 reduction in legal and professional expense, primarily attributed to a decrease in fees paid to a public relations firm. Year-to-date other expense, so operating income totaled $68,000 compared to $66,000 loss, $134,000 improvement due to the factors I just discussed. Year-to-date other expense was $81,000 compared to other income net of $67,000. The $148,000 increase in expense, again, is primarily attributed to the amortization of the intangible assets associated with the company's March 17th acquisition. The company reported a $22,000 loss from discontinued operations for the year compared to income from discontinued operations of $129,000 in the prior year, an increase of $151,000 in expense. As a result, the company reported a year-to-date net loss of $35,000 compared to net income of $250,000 in 2016. Noting, however, the $35,000 year-to-date loss included an additional $262,000 of expenses related to the amortization of intangibles and the swing in the discontinued operations. At this time, I'll have a few comments on our balance sheet as of September 30th. The company's net book value was $9.3 million compared to $8.8 million at December 31st, 2016. Mace had $11.2 million in total assets compared to $9.6 million at December 31st, 16. Cash and short-term investments decreased $1.9 million as the company funded the purchase of Washington Labs in the first quarter of 2017 and increased inventory. Inventories at September 30th, 2017 totaled $2,051,000 compared to $1,568,000, with $300,000 of the increase attributed to the Washington Labs acquisition. The company had $586,000 in goodwill and $2,070,000 in intangible assets related to the March 2017 acquisition. And in our footnotes to the financials, you could see the detail underlying the balances underpinning the intangible asset. Total liabilities at 9/30/17 were $1,953,000 compared to $776,000 at year-end, an increase of $1,177,000. And this increase is mainly attributed to the $1 million note we used to acquire Washington Labs. We had positive working capital of approximately $4.9 million and a current ratio of 5.0. Net operating losses at September 30th were approximately $60 million, with $1.1 million expiring in 2018, $4.5 million in 2019, $3.2 million in 2020, and the last NOL expiring in the year 2036. At this time, I'd like to thank you for joining us this afternoon, and I'll turn the call over to our President and CEO, John McCann.
Thanks, Carl. And again, the presentation on Mace.com website under Investor Relations and Presentations. I won't go through the presentation that we loaded onto the website, but it will show you the progress of the company in the quarter and in the year. Also, due to the growth and positive changes in the company, we will have multiple presenters during this conference call. After my brief remarks, I will introduce John McVeigh and then David Happy. I will talk about each gentleman prior to their brief commentaries. So as I stated in the second quarter call, the great turnaround of the company continues. We've increased our sales and also our net income as well produced positive EBITDA in the quarter. We've expanded our distribution in our reach, both domestically and internationally. In a large part due to the acquisition, we're able to increase our sales in North America, even as Europe continues to be soft. Domestically, with the exception of our sporting goods channel, which continues to undergo change and consolidation, the traditional retail channel of brick and mortar continues to evolve also, where we've benefited from our relations and our strategy through our acquisition to offer a wider variety of price points, product variations to each one of these channels. Additionally, our e-commerce strategy is working, and we continue to see this channel as a great opportunity for future growth and brand development. Our tactical channel continues to grow in 2017. The investments we've made in the channel over the past several years is paying off as we continue to win bids and expand the brand as the number one brand for law enforcement and civilians worldwide. The revenue growth came from the acquisition and organic growth as we implemented the strategy as I just discussed on previous calls. We have a multi-brand strategy and multi-brand approaches to the market so we can fill needs and opportunities more effectively now than ever. In the quarter, we were able to add 21 new accounts on top of the 16 new accounts we added in the second quarter, which is on top of the 50 new accounts we added in the first quarter. This does not include the expansion of our online retailers, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and where we see some more opportunity for growth for the brand, both for the Mace brand and our partner brand. However, I would be remiss with not noting that we did lose a major retailer during this period of time. This particular customer went to a low-price, low-quality product, which is unfortunate, but does happen. Additionally, in the quarter, we increased our gross margins due to increased efficiencies. We saw a 10.9% increase in gross margins, mostly due to mix and additional factors. Our tactical division, we are launching many new products, batons, tactical knives, and also handcuffs. We have been successful with our new products and also our distribution gains. We have made headway in launching munitions with more details to follow as we finalize what we need to do to finally launch our products. Timing looks to be early 2018, but more to come on our exciting news with regard to munitions in our tactical division. The majority of sales thus far has come from our core spray line of products with a small portion related to our TG Guard product line. Again, as we discussed last quarter, we successfully acquired and integrated Washington Labs into Mace. All production, sales, marketing, and distribution is being handled out of 4400 Carnegie. John McVay will touch on the business's mandate and vision for the company in a couple minutes. A couple other notes, our personal alarm business continues to do well. We've placed our personal alarms in several retailers, and we have a growing business with the number one personal alarm in the world. E-commerce is another opportunity for this product line, and we'll speak to that when David Happy talks. On our partnership with Vigilant, which has been beneficial, so beneficial that we've purchased the company. That did happen in the early part of the Q4, but we worked hard on this transition during Q3. And it's a transformative move, in my opinion, for the company. Not only did we buy the company, we've increased our talent level as David Happy has joined the company as an EVP. David will be on in a minute also to talk about his vision and the mandate for the future. A couple other notes that I'd like to mention is our partnership with Select Security has not produced the desired results. Therefore, we are looking for a new partner to take advantage of this home security opportunity. Our partnership with SecureCheck started out slowly but seems to be moving along quite nicely now, and we feel that within 2018 and 2019, we'll see some more benefits from that partnership on our surveillance lines of products. As I mentioned in the second quarter analysis, we did retool our LED-powered products. We've launched this product during the late part of the third quarter and the early fourth quarter, and we're seeing some modest but nice sell-through with the product. We also are continuing to work on all other product lines, and several programs are in place, which we'll report on in the near-term future. So thanks again for your time. And just as a management team, we continue to be bullish on 2017. We're having a good year. We'd like to be a little even more robust. I think some of the changes we've made with the company were going to help us and be in a position for more future growth, both domestically and internationally. We have partnered with Carlton McKenna & Company to look at future opportunities. Carlton McKenna was very helpful in both the acquisition of the Villagen brand and also with the Washington Labs acquisition, and continues to look for more opportunities for the company. And then lastly, on a banking side, we're very happy with our move to Chemical Bank. Not only have they provided us a very good treasury management system that's helped with our efficiencies inside, they also have, we have a support line of credit whenever we need to draw on it to make sure we're able to take advantages, both if it's an inventory purchase or an acquisition that comes along that we'd like to look at. So with thanks again, and now I'm going to turn the call over to John McVay, who's Vice President in charge of our custom manufacturing business and also assists in the company in partnerships, licensing opportunities, and also direct sales opportunity. John joins us with a wealth of experience in manufacturing, sales, marketing, and partnership. John assisted Mace in the move of the manufacturing from Vermont to Cleveland. He assisted with the acquisition of Washington Labs and assisted with some of the acquisition work that we needed to do with Vigilant. And just on a personal note, John does a great job. He's shown great leadership with our custom manufacturing. And when we look at sales, and some of you that have been with us for a long time realize that some of our sales have come from the acquisition that has been on purpose. We see an opportunity on a price point or an opportunity where we could not have taken advantage of that in the past with the assistance of John and partnering with both our Mace brand and some of our other brands. We've been able to take advantage of that. So at this point, I'd like to turn it over to John, and he's just going to talk a little bit about his role with the company and the future.
Well, thank you, John. For those of you who don't know, I was the project manager for the move from Vermont to Cleveland, the Mace move from Vermont to Cleveland back in late 13, and I have had an extremely strong sense of ownership since those days regarding the company. Last year when John asked me to assist with the acquisition of Washington Labs, I was excited to be back on the field and representing Mace Security International and John and Carl. Clearly, that acquisition earlier this year has been a significant step for our organization and toward future diversified growth. When the decision was made to move the assets to 4400 and integrate the new entity, we knew that there were a variety of challenges and opportunities ahead of us, but we knew that this decision was a sound one. It allowed us to maximize operational efficiencies, to take advantage of the economies of scale from a purchasing standpoint, improve our profit margins, and bring world-class service to our custom manufacturing customers. Now, just stepping back for a moment, just the planning and logistics of putting a move like this together crossed a variety of departmental and interdepartmental lines. And I must recognize Carl Smith and his floor-level leadership team for making every effort to making the physical accommodations required to integrate an entity like Washington Labs into the Mace family, from rack and shelving, from security areas, from electrical ventilation, air compressor expansion, and of various and sundry other engineering and installation-related needs. Say nothing of the prior fire prevention and suppression modifications to safeguard our people and to reinforce best practices regarding all of our material handling with respect to our manufacturing production capability. In addition to the physical integration plan, there was also a lot of thought. There was thoughtful introduction regarding the introduction of new key staff members from Canton to Cleveland. As a blend of the two company cultures began to take place, you could see that the results were absolutely beneficial and was an absolute reconfirmation of our faith regarding our people and their ability to adjust to a new situation like that, adapt, be patient, and be productive. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, some of those improvements were basically found with our mixing and fill room efficiencies, those operating improvements and economies of scale, certainly our assembly and fulfillment efficiencies where we blended some of the best practices from both groups, have certainly improved margins and have certainly improved our customer service since we've been caring for those Washington Labs customers. But the committed cooperation and patience through this process was impressive and a tribute to our most valuable assets, and those assets are our people. On the technical and accounting side of things, our MAS, our ERP system, it is now in full possession of all the inventory items, cost of goods sold, bill of materials, and so forth. And I want to just take a moment to acknowledge Rem Belzinkas and Ken Kittleberger for their knowledge, their patience, and their commitment to getting the job done. There was a lot of data to handle, that's for sure. So I want to recognize those guys because they just represent the epitome of a team effort. I'd also like to say that on the marketing and sales side of things, we're excited about the ability to work with our custom manufacturing partners because it provides us with some unique opportunities from a dual-branded branding approach that provides us with more selling options to a variety of channels of distribution and the capability to get competitive, to create a competitive advantage when wholesale pricing is extremely competitive, and it almost always is. Dual branding initiatives are currently underway with Sam's on the retail side and Amazon.Canada in cooperation with David Happy on the e-commerce side, and David, of course, will be speaking in a few moments. But just pretty much in closing here, I'd just like to say that the custom manufacturing business has many segments, many opportunities. Products that fit into traditional retail channels of distribution, law enforcement, and on an international basis. Our commitment to quality, competitive pricing, and customer service are the keys to our success, and will continue to make Mace the leader in the industry. And a few things that I really can't get into at this point, but we have several initiatives we're working on. Very excited about some opportunities that we have with licensing, some partnerships, some new products, some product development initiatives that are going on, and we're very excited about what kind of results we're going to be able to achieve with the fruition of some of those activities. So I'll just close with that and say thank you, and absolutely delighted to be part of the Mace team.
So thanks, John. And once again, we'll get John's bio up on our website so everybody can see how talented John is and how much we have respect for his and his ability and looking forward to the future. Lastly, like before I leave this subject, it was a big acquisition for the company to do. And as John credited a lot of people within the organization, we were able to seamlessly integrate this company. We did it so well that it led to another acquisition within the same year, which is a lot for a small company like Mace is. But this integration happened both from a board level support all the way down to our shipping supervisor support to make sure that we did what we had to do, because quality, pricing, customer service are the keys to the continued growth and the leadership of Mace has in the market. We're constantly leveraging our abilities to do more and see more and be more in the marketplace. So we're really excited about John coming on board. He can talk a little bit more about we'll post his bio so you can see more of what he's been able to do in the past and how we're excited about the future with John on board. With that, as I mentioned, we have another speaker that's going to be talking in a minute. I'm just going to do a quick intro. David Happy and I met probably over 3 years ago when I took over Mace, and David had started a company called Vigilant Personal Protection System. We met in a Minneapolis airport. We started talking about his vision for what he wanted to do and what I wanted to do at Mace. At that point, we said, hey, great, good luck. Let's both build out a little bit. Let's get some initiatives done, and then let's talk in the future. Fast forward to about a year ago this time, or maybe 15 months ago, we signed a licensing deal with Vigilant to do more online marketing, to bring in some of his great, well-designed, well-thought-out, well-engineered alarms. And we started that way. Lo and behold, the opportunity came to actually then acquire the company. Not only acquire the company we were excited about, but acquiring David as well. David brings a lot of energy, brings a lot of knowledge, brings a lot of enthusiasm to the market. I won't go through his full background because I'd like him to do it, but it'll tell you why we're excited about where we're going, what we're doing, and how we're doing it. So with that, I'd like to introduce David Happy, EVP of Mace Security International. David?
Thanks, John. And as I was listening to the other speakers speak, I was on Amazon.com, and I saw the most recent feedback that Mace has received on Amazon.com, and it says, thinking of buying them as Christmas presents for 8. And that's exactly what we're about. As John mentioned, my name is David Happy. I am the newest member to the team. I can't be any more bullish or excited about Mace. I joined Mace when they acquired my company, Vigilant Personal Protection Systems, but I told John that I'd give you a snapshot of my history so you can kind of understand why this marriage was a perfect marriage for both Mace and for Vigilant. My career started at Best Buy, where I was one of the youngest buyers in the history of Best Buy Company. I was then recruited and went down to Walmart in Bentonville, Arkansas. At Walmart, I was the national consumer electronics buyer of, at the time, was about a $700 million category with full P&L responsibility for their electronics products at Walmart's Sam's Club division. After Walmart, I went on to Amazon.com. I was the lead consultant for Amazon.com when they had no consumer electronics, and we opened, I was on Amazon's payroll when we opened Amazon's consumer electronics store on Amazon.com. I then went into a sourcing role, and I stepped in as a VP of sales and marketing. We created outside of Amazon, but Amazon was one of our first customers. We created the Akai television product line. We took Akai from zero to $100 million in about a year and a half. For the same client, I was also the vice president of sales for a division of Samsung CCTV, and we sold Samsung CCTV through the wholesale club channel to Costco and BJ's and Sam's Club, and we saw a similar rise with Samsung CCTV to sales of about $100 million over the course of about 3 years. And I'm here because I see the same potential at Mace. I signed up with Mace because I see the same things, the same dynamics setting up that I saw with both Akai and with Samsung. The dynamic is the same and the upside is the same. And John and I did start talking a long time ago. I didn't need to sell Vigilant. Vigilant was profitable from its first day, and it started generating positive income for Mace also on its first day as a Mace-owned brand. Vigilant is the number one most reviewed brand of personal alarms on Amazon. And while I was listening to the call, I was searching on Amazon. If you type in personal alarms into Amazon as a search, type in personal alarms, you'll see that out of all the thousands of personal alarms that are on Amazon today, Vigilant is number one and number two. And we're moving Mace up into some of those top positions as well. It's no surprise that our largest competitors copy us, which is the highest form of flattery, but fortunately for Mace, I learned during my Best Buy days how we stay ahead of the competition. We're already working on the next generation, while our competitors are busy copying Mace's last generation. So I didn't need to sell Vigilant, but the company wasn't on the market except to Mace. I had an offer from a much less capable competitor of Mace's to join forces with them, but I hand-selected Mace because of the opportunity and the way that it's set up against what I've done in my past. The crossroads we came to was that either Vigilant had to become a viable competitor to Mace or join forces with Mace. I needed for Vigilant the additional distribution, and I had to either build it or find it, and I found it in Mace. So the best way for me to explain to you what we're doing with Vigilant and Mace, how we put these two companies together, I'm going to tell you what Vigilant got from Mace and what Mace got from Vigilant. What I found in a partner and an acquisition from Mace was shared resources. Vigilant gets to use the accounting, the logistics, the marketing, the distribution that y'all as shareholders have already paid for. We use the assets already in place with Mace without having to recreate it, and we have almost a zero SG&A add because operationally all the pieces were already in place that I would have needed to build externally of Mace. So we gain the advantages of using the big company resources without having to develop them at an added expense if I were outside of Mace. Mace has an extremely low operating expense. It reminds me of my old Walmart days. For any of you who have ever visited Mace, you know Mace's expenses are kept extremely low, and I can tell you that they're on the same scale and with the same thought process that Walmart runs. And a lot of that comes from John McCann's history within the consumer electronics space. I got a better brand when I partnered with Mace. 99% of consumers know that the Mace brand name, but the brand is still underdeveloped from a retail penetration standpoint. We get to take Mace as a brand name into new products, new platforms, new retailers, and eventually new countries. There's really no limits on what we can do with the Mace brand. And then distribution. What Vigilant really needed was more diversification of distribution to continue the growth outside of the customers and the platforms that we are currently using. I'd either build it or find it, and Mace has a better distribution capability and network than Vigilant had. So Mace was strong where Vigilant was weak, and Vigilant filled a gap where Mace can kill the competition and expand product offerings into new retailers. Here's what Mace and you as shareholders get from Vigilant. You acquired the number one most reviewed personal alarms on the internet. You got immediate positive revenue generation. You got our supply side relationships, all of which transferred directly to Mace and are already in place and are already reaping benefits for our new parent company. You got better personal alarms than Mace had and all of Mace's competitors have. If you haven't used a Mace or Vigilant alarm, I'd encourage you to jump onto Amazon and buy one today. Buy a Mace-branded alarm off of Amazon today so you can really see and feel what we're talking about. They make awesome Christmas gifts, as that last reviewer just posted on Amazon. You got an in-house e-commerce strategy to change how Mace is going to come to market worldwide on e-commerce, and I'll talk about that in a minute. And you got someone to join John and the rest of the team with Eric Crawford, et cetera, that is nationally known. I've sold easily myself as a salesperson into the industry, conservatively over $1 billion in my career to retailers, not including my time working directly for Amazon, Walmart, and Best Buy. So what I was hired to do, my immediate priority is to expand the Mace brand online to everywhere that you as shareholders – what you should be able to do in a few months is go online, and everywhere you think we should be, Mace is going to be. Over the next few months, you'll see Mace products expanded on all the platforms you'd expect to find us. And as a Mace shareholder, that should be a welcome expectation. When the online business gets repositioned and expanded, I will then join John McCann and Eric Crawford in 2018, expanding our presence in brick-and-mortar retailers. There's only one brand name in pepper spray, and it's Mace. And what I liked about this Mace deal is Mace is a brand like Kleenex or Coca-Cola. It's a household brand name. We should be in every single retailer across the country. Nobody even knows how to pronounce the name of some of the competitors that sit on the retail shelves today, and that's why their products underperform both in terms of their product performance and their sell-through, and we're about to fix that problem for our retail partners. So I'm about to turn it back over to John, but before you ask me any specific questions about our online strategy, from which a competitive standpoint I may or may not be able to comment on, I'm going to give you one of my favorite quotes that Dick Schultz from Best Buy, Sam Walton from Walmart, and Sun Tzu, the author of Art of War, and probably John McCann from Mace would all agree with. And that quote goes like this from General George Patton. I have studied the enemy all my life. I've read the memoirs of his generals and his leaders. I've even read his philosophers, I've listened to his music, I've studied in detail the account of every damn one of his battles, and I know exactly how he's going to react under any set of circumstances. And the enemy hasn't the slightest idea of what I'm going to do. So when the time comes, we're going to whip the hell out of him. Mace's time is now. You're all welcome to join me on LinkedIn. Add me on LinkedIn, and if you add me on LinkedIn, please put in your comments that you're a Mace shareholder so I know who you are and would accept your request. But you can see on there some industry news as I see it as it comes along. But understand, shareholders, that Mace's time is here. In 2018, Mace is the company the competitors have been worried would arrive. Our time is now. There's only one acceptable answer to Mace's market position, and the only acceptable outcome is to win, and that's why they brought me here, and that's what we're about to do. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to Mr. McCann.
David, thanks again. And we're very excited to have David on board as well as John. And Carl and myself have been working hard, as you guys have known, for the past couple years. Now we really feel this year and 2018 we'll be able to achieve more than we have in the past, even though we feel like we've done a lot. We still feel there's a lot left to do. We have talent level around us that's never been higher or better. We have capacity to build, create, and distribute products for safety and security that will answer every need that we can think of. Lastly, just to touch on our tactical division, as I mentioned earlier, we will have some exciting news as we draw closer to the end of the year, and we will keep everybody posted on that. And as we've always talked about, we do have very diverse verticals that we can do business in, and we're looking forward to now being the time where we can take advantage of each one of these, whether it be brick and mortar, e-commerce, international, and tactical. We now have people, products in place to make it happen. So with that, Jody, we're going to turn it back over to you so we can do a quick question and answer session.
Certainly. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Thurman Willis, who's a private investor. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Gentlemen, good quarter. Nice hearing from all of you. Thank you for taking my question. I'll follow the rules, John, with one question and one short follow-up. My initial question refers to, and I hope everyone read the Seeking Alpha article that was very positive relative to Mace. And my question relative to that is, Even in your presentation today, I noticed that we didn't mention the jail guns. If you go to Mace and punch up to, and key in jail guns, you'll see like 14. To me, it's your best product. And many people don't like carrying firearms. You can get this without a permit. And I think we could help in situations like in Texas if some of those people would have had a Mace jail gun. So my question is this. John, what are our plans to market the gun and tell others about the gun? We seem to always not have it displayed on our marketing, key marketing items, and SeekingAlpha.com did not mention the Mace jail gun at all, mentioned all the other products, but didn't mention this. So if you could answer that, please.
Sure. So as you know, Thurman, we're one of the only companies in the world that has a pepper gun. We have spent quite a bit of time evolving that pepper gun. We went to Pepper Gun 2.0 last year, which we launched very successfully. Part of David Happy and John McVeigh's mandate is that you will see more of the gun out there. David's working on some strategies with John and myself on a direct selling opportunity to reach people in more of an intimate way to make sure they're aware of the gun, the capabilities of the pepper gun. It's a replaceable, which means that it comes with two cartridges, a water-based cartridge and a live cartridge, so you can practice it. It shoots further than any other product on the marketplace. And a lot of it is you'll see more education and a stronger push both in e-commerce and in some direct selling opportunities on the gun.
Okay, the second part of my question, and I'm glad to hear that because I think it's potentially our best product. Back to the Seeking Alpha article, the headline was Business Moving Forward, Share Price Stagnates. I congratulate the board management for all the fundamental changes, the fact that we're profitable. We've made these seemingly fantastic acquisitions, chairman's letter on inflection, the fact that we're now profitable, the acquisitions have going to, I think, really promote our sales. And my question, getting to the question, is about the marketing and education. As I sat in a shareholders meeting 3 years ago, and we all commented that we needed fans in the stands. Four different groups hold about 60% of Mace, and fundamentally, everybody, you know, has done well, and I appreciate the excitement, but those of us that are shareholders are looking at the same price we saw 5 years ago. We've got a, you know, super tax loss carry forwards. We said when we became profitable, our stock would move up. When we made the acquisitions, the stock would move up. We release great earnings. We have no volume. We see no increase in market cap. And we're acquiring companies that scare me to death with such a depressed value. So here we stand 5 years later, and we're at a price no higher than we were 5 years ago, even with the tremendous, tremendous progress in fundamentals that have been made. We do have an overhang. We're all familiar with that. I hope that Chairman Barone and Vice Chairman Dennis Armato is on the phone. I know that they are part of Ancora. Ancora owns, 30% of our stock. My question is, some plan needs to be developed to promote our company. I don't see the plan. I've not seen the plan. I know we've hired four PR firms only to let those four go. We don't seem to want to put any money in marketing and education. We as shareholders have just fed up with being held hostage for poor decisions by the board of not putting money into marketing and education. And I would just say, and I would ask Dennis and Richard to take the handcuffs off management and, let them go. Barone and Armato, I know, get upset with me talking about this, but I've heard it for so long. I'm just frustrated to heck about everybody's all the time excitement, but our stock never goes up. We give all these excuses, but the share price never goes up. And so we shareholders are held hostage to poor decisions by the board. So my question is, would you be very, very, very specific about what the plans are? And my comments to Armato and Barone is, if you cannot enhance shareholder value, which we hired an investment banker to do, get the hell out and let somebody else get on the board that will manage this company. We've done the fundamentals, which are difficult. Now it's the easy part, and we won't spend a few dollars to hire a professional firm that has a Rolodex to get news out to the customers. So I'm tired of Richard, and I'm tired of Dennis, and you know, that's just where it is. So calm my frustrations and tell me that they're going to do it different this time and not and expect different results.
Well, Thurman, thanks for the we can't be
and
specific.
I hope they're on the call.
Side. We will. Thank you very much for the call. Thank you very much for your support. We, as a management team, will continue to push forward to do as much as we can to make sure that we educate consumers on the great benefits of Mace branded products, whether it's our personal alarms, our pepper sprays, our knives.
My question, John, is what's the plan? What's the plan? You've hired two great folks. What is the plan? I see no plan to enhance shareholder value that we hired an investment banker a year ago to do. We announced all these great things, and our stock is stuck and manipulated at 38 to 40 cents. It's ridiculous. I want to know what the plan is. The board doesn't have a plan. Richard and Dennis doesn't have a plan. That's my point. They don't have a plan, so they need to get out. And because they're not involved and they're not engaged in this company. And we as shareholders, we're tired of being held hostage to their poor decisions. And it's not management. I'm talking about Richard and Dennis.
Okay. Well, I think maybe we'll go on to other questions because I can't really comment on anything there. But
I hope they're on the call. I doubt they would even be on the call.
No, we know there's several board members on the call, but so maybe Jody, we'll go to the next question. Sorry,
your next
Thurman,
question comes from. I apologize. Yes, your next question comes from the line of Andrew Shapiro of Blondale Capital. Your line is open.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks. I have some questions here about the transformative acquisition of Washington Labs. And to get some more information in detail on what I hope will also be a further transformative acquisition of Vigilant. So regarding Washington Labs, with a couple more months under your belt, in what ways has Washington Labs acquisition met? And also in what ways, if any, has it disappointed your expectations?
So mostly met our expectations. You know, it gives us a wide variety, as John had alluded to before, of a multi-brand strategy with several different retailers. It gives us opportunities both on the tactical side of our business and on the consumer side of our business. In the future, we actually, with David Happy's help, and that's why it's a great marriage with Vigilant, taking his knowledge and be able to expand what we're doing with some of our partner companies with an online platform. For example, Canada and some other markets where we're going to be able to go online. We can't really get into specifics because we don't want to give away the recipe of the soup. Where we've seen some disappointments, quite honestly, is the softness in Europe has affected some of our key partners along in this process. And then also some general softness in the sporting goods category has affected some of our partners. But being able to go into almost any account with a multi-brand strategy gives us a leg up. And also, like I'd have to say, on the operational side, it's been tremendous. The owner's son, Brent Harris and Chris Brogdon, who came over with the acquisition, are hardworking gentlemen that have helped our efficiencies in both the field room, their leadership, and their also abilities have been tremendous. And also little things like logistics. We now have greater flexibility with logistics. We're doing some different things with some incorporation of what they did in their background, and then also a general operating improvements as well as the sales and marketing environments.
Okay, and on a more tangible basis, with respect to the Washington Labs acquisition. Remind us here, is the measurement and adjustment potential on the earnout on the acquisition of Washington Labs, is it both up and down, or is it only the potential reduction on the seller note?
It's only a potential reduction on the seller note.
Okay, so no more money otherwise would go out, and it could be a reduction. When is the contingent earnout or adjustment down on the note? When does that measurement occur and is determined?
Year after the acquisition.
So March of 2018.
Okay, March of 2018. And has the acquisition so far been achieving your the projections and expectations, and one should not expect to see a reduction in the note?
No, right, exactly. After 6 months or looking at the run rate of their average sales, I see no issue with them meeting that threshold.
Okay. So well, in that sense, that's usually good, right?
That's a
good thing. All right. Let's move on to Vigilant and the acquisition. You guys have commented pretty nicely in detail and articulated it really well what Mace acquired when it purchased Vigilant, and also what David got in terms of a partnership. Your financial statement footnotes disclose that $1.2 million was paid for Vigilant, subject to some adjustments, including an earnout. So can I ask some questions here about the transaction details to the extent you can share, I hope. Of the $1.2 million, how much was cash and how much equity was issued?
So, all right, cash at close was $400,000, and then we issued 1 million shares of stock at close. Subject to an earnout is an additional, based on net contribution margin over the next 6 months, $300,000 based on achievement of that, and then another possible earnout of 400,000 options over the course of the next 3 years.
And all of that added together, based on Black-Scholes and everything else, equals $1.2 million?
Yeah, that's all combined.
Okay. And the measurement you said on the contribution margin that would be part of the earnout, is that earnout paid in cash or a mixture of cash and shares?
There's two pieces of the earnout. The one piece measured after 6 months would be a note payable to Vigilant, to David, and the other one would be in stock.
And in more stock. Excellent. Okay. And regarding the earnout, I guess it doesn't really matter then. It's not for me to ask about whether it's two ways, because basically we're talking about 800,000 kind of in value, 1 million shares and 400K, and then the rest of it only comes in the event that one delivers on the contribution margin, et cetera. Okay. And you've also elaborated on his role, so I think we got that one covered. Let me back out in the queue. I do have other questions, though, on your consumer and tactical, et cetera, but in case there's others that have been waiting around for Thurman and then myself, I want to let them in.
Sure. Thank you, Andrew.
Come back to me, though.
Again, if you'd like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Vijay Moralio of RB Second. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Vijay at Regal Point Capital. Congratulations on the quarter, gentlemen. It looks like we're moving in the right direction. I do share Thurman's frustration with the speed, but I don't believe that that's the fault of what we're doing right now. My question is regarding the tactical trend, so to speak. We know trees don't grow to the sky. How long do you expect this nice growth rate in tactical to continue, John?
Well,
but I'll come back.
Sure. Thanks, BJ. And we appreciate your support. And for disclosure, BJ and I met at investor conference, and he bought stock and has been tracking the stock and actually has been very helpful with some other initiatives that he has brought over to the company. On the tactical side, we think we have a lot of opportunities. We think the growth rate can continue because today we've launched tactical knives, which have been very well received amongst our distributors and our customers. Our defense sprays continue to grow in penetration in the marketplace, especially as they see what we're doing and what we're about. John McVay has been working diligently with a couple of our custom manufacturing partners in order to make sure that they have the best offerings that they can potentially have available. And then lastly, why I'm so bullish on that we will continue this growth rate is we have a plan to launch our munitions in the early part of 2018. We feel we're on track. We just don't feel comfortable enough yet to announce it. But we feel that the production, the parameters, the ideas, the protocols, and all of the things we need to do that we did not get done the last time, that we will be able to launch munitions, which will get us deeper into the tactical division with double-digit growth potential in 2018 and beyond.
Excellent. On the tactical business, is it safe to assume it's slightly lower margin, or am I not thinking about it right?
It's slightly lower margins, depending on the products. Our goal with munitions will be slightly higher margins. Some of the products that we're able to introduce, we're more commodity style, so we're accepting lower margins knowing that we're penetrating the market with them. Example is handcuffs, right? Very good quality non-DOG handcuff that fit a segment in the market after listening to Doug Melzik and Eric Crawford, two of our sales guys in that segment, saying, I can get these orders if we can do this. And we're able to, through Carl and a couple other of our sourcing folks, especially our quality assurance team, Bernie Graney, to produce a very good product that fit the market and fit the spec and then also allowed us to be profitable, but slightly below where we would be with defense sprays and a couple other products.
Of course, and I'm sure that the volume will make up for it. Now, this is a question of curiosity, really. For example, I saw in the reports that we got a new federal agency, but are we also doing business with the local police and municipalities?
We do business on all levels, so whether it's state, local, federal, our goal is to do business with all of them. It was one of the biggest things 2 years ago, I think it was, when we finally got rid of the SAM list, that we were able to do business through every segment, whether it's a private security company all the way to the federal government.
Okay, I'm going to back out, John, but I do have more questions. Congrats on the quarter, and I'll talk to you soon. Let's see who else
Thank
has questions.
Sir.
Your next question comes from the line of Andrew Shapiro. Your line is open again.
Hi, thanks. A few follow-ups on VJ's on the tactical, and then I have some questions on some of the other segments. You gave us the level of tactical product sales Q3 versus prior year, but was there any bulk TG Guard sales either in this quarter or last year's quarter that influenced the comparison?
Not notable.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
There was some, but nothing
material, not like in some of those quarters where we had a six-figure TG Guard order.
Right. And we're constantly, as you know, Andrew, we're constantly bidding on it, so we're qualified with the GSA. Doesn't mean that you're qualified with the GSA that agency is going to actually order.
Okay. And in the past, you supplied products to both U.S. foreign government and military customers. To what extent is Mace Tactical more in the conversation now and you're visibly participating in more RFPs than, let's say, just 12 months ago? I don't want to go back to the era when we were barred from because of past managements and past EPA issues, et cetera. But just comparing to last year, to what extent are we participating in more or less U.S. and foreign government and military customer RFPs?
So I would, like, if I was to peg it at a number, I would say it's between 25 and 35% more. We now, through the different agencies, our distributors, and our internal sales force, are almost able to touch every level of law enforcement, from prisons, as I mentioned earlier, to private security, to the federal government. So we see that as a constant increase and a constant opportunity for us to do more in that segment.
And then typically, what is the time horizon?
25 to 35.
Sorry, I didn't mean to overstep. Typically, what's the time horizon? Okay, they put out an RFP, you make the proposal. What's generally the time horizon until determination of starting to make an order?
With a department that has a non-event, so this is just regular field business, it's usually 6 to 9 months. They start that RFP process potentially a year before they're actually going to purchase, when they know they've hit levels of inventory that need replenishment, and then it's a 6 to 9 month process. The only difference that just so you have in the back of your mind, if there's a riot or an incident in a city or whatnot, then it's an immediate fill opportunity. And now, more than ever, most departments are stocking that they can take care of immediate fills, but that would be the only caveat in there. But I would deem it a 6 to 9 month process.
Okay. Now, as of the end of the Q3, where were you on the ability to store and sell an expanded line of less lethal munitions and other consumables, or where do you stand today? When you talk about the hope of having some tactical announcement in the coming quarter, is it along the lines of the less lethal munitions and other consumables, or something else?
No, it's along the lines of the less lethal consumables. And where we are today, we're probably at about 70% to where we need to be. So as soon as we cross over the threshold of 90-ish%, which means that all the dots and all the T's are crossed and dotted, then we'll announce our plans. But it's been a goal, it's been a priority, as we talked about earlier today at an internal meeting, and it continues to be, because we think we can bring products to market that'll make a difference. The brand will make a difference, and then we have the partnerships and the leadership team now that can fulfill that promise.
Okay. Do you have any major shows planned for Mace Tactical in the upcoming months, and do you list these on your company website, and if so, where?
They should be listed on a company website. I'll confirm where exactly they are listed. We this past week, the sales team was at SWAT Roundup down in Florida. Then prior to that, they were at IACP, which is the International Association of Chiefs of Police. I believe Doug has one more regional SWAT show, which is basically all your SWAT leaders are there. They look at products, they test products, they actually do some competitions to keep themselves sharp and ready to protect all citizens. And then the next biggest show for the company will be January 23rd, the SHOT Show in Las Vegas, where we will have some information and we'll be doing a lot of meetings with strategic partners on our initiatives.
Okay, although that's not tactical, or it is tactical. I think I asked about that
tactical
in the past.
That's everything. The SHOT Show really stands for sporting, hunting, outdoor, tactical, you know, is really what they use SHOT as an acronym for it. And then obviously it's a combination of a Walmart buyer might actually be at that show, all the way to a five-star general that's protecting America.
Okay.
To your local police officers, to, you know, your private security.
Okay. My next question is regarding, I don't know if it's for you or for David, but it's kind of regarding the web sales during the quarter. But before I get that, I have a question regarding kind of defining it. When we talk about and ask about web sales, is that web sales just on the Mace site, and that wouldn't be web sales via Amazon, because like you were selling directly to Amazon, but with the Vigilant acquisition and the advent of having the Vigilant store, and which may become the Mace store in Amazon, do you guys consider that, and will you be tracking it and considering that as Mace web sales when they're made from like the Mace store on Amazon versus when you sold directly to Amazon? I think you know the nature of my question, but can you kind of elaborate?
Right. So David really can't speak to the past, but so internally we track it several different ways. We tackle e-commerce, then individual e-commerce. So selling to and on Amazon would be a separate track then. Mace.com. Mace.com, we track it individually because it's a different sell. That's us selling our products online. Base.com, we use more educational aid, and I think David has some initiatives that him and I have discussed that he will be able to implement on Base.com to increase our revenue transaction on in our conversion. But today, it's the highest price point. We protect a lot of our other retailers. E-commerce, as we're calling it, which would include our online sales, that's where David really is going to make a difference within the organization. Not only his product abilities, his knowledge of that industry, and then his past life experiences, where you'll see basically Carl and I still have to talk because we don't want to give away competitive advantages of how we would break that out. But today we allow that to flow up through our consumer channel because obviously we're one of the only defense break companies that is public, and we do know our competitors listen in. They look at what we're doing. They try and mimic us. They follow us. So consequently, we have to be very careful in what we talk about, but we do know based on David's talent level and abilities that both brick and mortar and e-commerce will become strategic focuses in the near-term future, especially as Thurman talked about, this is more education to a consumer, but making sure that they know it's Mace. You know, if you don't buy Mace, it doesn't say Mace. It's not Mace. It's just pepper spray. And so consequently, I think there's a lot of opportunities that we'll be able to take advantage of now more than in the past. So we're about 3:15, and I think we're about an hour in. So, Andrew, if you had a couple other questions, and then maybe we'll go back to BJ, and then we might wrap it up.
So can you discuss your international sales and what is working and not working? I noticed that Mace Brand India Twitter handle and news articles coming out of Mace, not of Mace, but out of India, talk of Mace being repped out there by a rep organization for you. And what, if any, is the timing of having meaningful sales flowing through on the international channel?
So on the international channel, there's a general softness still in Europe. There is a lot of requirements and labeling that are now being tacked on because of the flow of goods and the immigration crisis that happened about, you know, the first quarter of 2016 that really kind of dissipated since then, but now there's the overreaction to products. So we're dealing with that successfully. Doug and Eric have been very, very good about following up and working with our distributors as well as John McVeigh with their customers to make sure that we're responsive to the market. We're seeing some growth opportunities beyond just Central Europe, if you would, South America, parts of Eastern Europe. Canada is a huge opportunity, especially with our animal repellents and some of the other things we did, as Carl mentioned in his commentaries. With regard to our international brand strategy, I'll just comment to say that we're seeding the fields, if you would, in several different markets to bring to a market a completely different strategy than we had in the past. Now, as I said, like we feel really comfortable with what we're doing out of our 4,400 Carnegie facility. We feel that logistically, operationally, distribution and sales and marketing-wise, we now are ready for expansion. We also want to parlay that into a worldwide expansion of the brand. So in India, you'll see some things. In other parts of the world, you're going to start to see some things, both on a social media and an advertising basis, and allow us to seed the field in order to then be able to do some things that I think will be unique and different and a huge shareholder value down the road. So we're not ready to talk about it, but it's good that you're seeing some of the things that we're doing because it means that it's resonating.
We're digging deep. Can you explain the quarter over quarter, your raw materials inventory jumped. I mean, it jumped 41%. Is this increase versus known orders that are in your pipeline?
So the increase in inventory, we capitalized on a couple of key buys with OC resin that was at a three-year low. So we stocked up on the OC to obviously lower our cost of goods sold going forward and improve the margins. That was a good portion of it. And then we did bring in, because we packaged the goods here, the knives, the handcuffs, the tactical knives, the new products that John had mentioned, you know, they come in and are considered raw material. And then once we package them, they go from raw material to finished goods.
Got it. Okay. And what resources are being devoted to your newer products like Mace Alert 911. We obviously didn't see a lot of sales from it. This is something that's been on the burner, and of course what remains of your LED safety product line, you kind of mentioned you've repackaged or redid that. It sounds like you may be relaunching that. But what's going on with Mace Alert 911 and whatever LED safety product line you got?
Sure. So we, as we discussed in the second quarter and third quarter, we've done a soft launch, as we call it, of our LED products. We've seen some nice success. We're going after some alternative channels with the product to really hit that core demographic that would use the product and realize the benefit and the value of the product. Mace Alert 911, we have a couple, as you know, we've had some fits and stops. We haven't had the success that we have. We have a great partner. This is where I think the value of both John and David will come on board. David's in the midst of negotiating and working on some plans to get some increased distribution on the product, both in brick and mortar and online, and then also working with the patent holder, who we'll be meeting with shortly, to see what else we can do to make sure that we get this product into retail. So with that, right now, we're not sitting on a lot of inventory. By the grace of God, we've been able to sell the inventory that we had purchased, and we are still very bullish on the product and its future within the placement of what we want to do. We just haven't had the success, but we have some plans that I think will hopefully change that in the near-term future.
Okay, and lastly, two things. What is the status of gaining access to the New York market? And are there any other states, Canadian provinces, and other jurisdictions where legislation and regulation is pending that might better open the market to us?
So at the next board meeting, I will make a presentation about talking about trying to open up the New York market, because it would be great for us. I've had some nice conversations with an outside consultant that I think you referred me to, Andrew, so I appreciate that.
Okay.
Washington, D.C. just broke open, so we're able to sell pepper and stun guns into that market. We're pretty excited about that. Canada, there's been no movement. On the reverse side of that, we're a little concerned with some of the statutes that are happening over in Europe. There might be some changes, some restrictions being in place. We are working simultaneously on the UK to see if we couldn't break open that market. Today we sell, it's a Mace patented product called Stopper Red, which is a red dye irritant that we use in the market. But we are hopeful that potentially, if the Brexit happens, that Ireland and some of the other countries might say we're going to allow the civilian carry of pepper spray, but those are still down the road. New York would be a unique opportunity that if we can get their archaic laws changed, as we're able to do in Massachusetts, and that would be the biggest benefit to the company in the near term.
Right. Now, when you said you guys lost, and a consumer question here, when you said you guys lost, I think it was a sporting goods customer, you lost a customer to a low price and low quality product. When did you lose them? Is it the third quarter reflected some of that loss, or was it recently? And what was that customer sales level in the prior year, so that we kind of know what kind of headwind we're facing on year-over-year comparables?
Right. So it was probably just under $1 million customer.
Million a year or million a quarter?
Million a year.
Okay.
And then it was late second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter of a year ago. The sales team is working very hard because the buyer even has a little bit of remorse, but it's a new buyer in a new position, and the other buyer just made a mistake, and they're recognizing that. So we're hoping that we can reverse that, but
You said late third quarter last year, that means this quarter or potentially the first month of Q4 is actually the anniversarying of the headwind already, and that it's behind us.
Well, we were able to anniversary through another customer some of the loss that we experienced, but like what unfortunately for the company is that late they pulled a promotion that they were going to do. So what happened is that we lost the everyday placement on the shelf, which was worth X, not as much as the additional promotion. Because they put in a low-quality, low-priced product, the sales revenue wasn't generating what would amount to allow the buyer to do off-shelf promotion. So then they canceled their off-shelf promotion. So that was the big hit. which was late third quarter, which we were able to offset with some increases with some other customers, very nice increases, by the way, that we will be able to duplicate in a year from now again. But then in the early part of the fourth quarter, but even in our October sales number, we were able to overcome that with some of the other things we were doing. So the only reason why I noted it in our notes is it was a big disappointment. It was a bit of a surprise because it came out of left field, to be honest with you.
Okay, and then you guys did a flurry. Last question for me. You guys did a flurry, and I thought it seeded the market well. You did a flurry of investor non-deal investor roadshows, some of which may have coincided with you doing business, other business development in those particular cities. And then you kind of stopped going to MicroCap and other conferences to tell the May story. Now, the story's only gotten better. I mean, this is somewhat Thurman's criticism, but I'm going to try to articulate it differently. The story's only gotten better, but you kind of stopped the bus line. And if you want people to ride the bus, okay, the bus has got to come to the bus stop timely and on a regular basis, or people will not change their behavior or change their habits. So what is on the plate for investor relations, non-deal roadshow, conference stuff that right now, and if there is nothing on the plate, I kind of have to ask the question, since it's been a quiet period for so darn long, why is it that the board has stopped resourcing you or giving you the green light to appear and attend at a few of these conferences to tell the story and to meet different people, like, you know, Vijay was a new addition?
So there's nothing on the docket right now. There's ongoing discussions about jumping into a couple of investor conferences on allocation of resources, because we are limited, right? There's only X amount of us here. We did two acquisitions this year. We're in the process of doing a partnership that I think will have a huge long-time benefit to the company, as we discussed on our tactical side. And then we're also looking at a couple other partnerships, licensing, and opportunities in the core business that kind of forego winning to going to investor conferences. I do know a lot of board members are on, and we can make it a point of discussion at the next board meeting. Now that we have more resources and dynamic professional resources, just other than Carl and myself, that we can take up a strategy of divide and conquer with confidence that when we go to a conference that we can represent the company, the brand, and the story well.
I think that would be good before you give out another million shares, et cetera. I mean, I'm glad that David's a shareholder and he's aligned with me. But,
and he had bought shares prior to the acquisition, just, you know, full disclosure. When we first met in Minneapolis, he had bought shares.
Good. But the point being is it'd be nice that we have an ongoing, I'm not saying spend a lot of money, but, you know, you got to go to Benton, Arkansas. You got to go wherever. And when you go to those places, it's not all that far away from, you know, having a presentation at some brokerage firm or doing whatever to add to it. So it shouldn't be a lot of extra effort if it's just well thought out and coordinated, which we're more than happy to help you with.
Duly noted. And thank you, Andrew. You have, as shareholder, it's been very good, both on the honey and the vinegar.
Great. Thank you.
So, BJ, I think you had one more, and then I think we're approaching 3:30.
BJ, your line is open.
All right. Thank you, John. So, you know what? I love the way the conversation is going. It's almost as if you guys just teed me up. Because, John, you're right. There's only X amount of you guys there. And we have our hands full with the acquisitions. And it's not going to be the last, of course. If you look at where we're selling and where we're making money, of course, the bulk of it is consumer, and the bulk of it isn't growing the way we want. It has to do with the fact that our product is not a great product. It is. It has to do with the fact that nobody knows about it. Let me tell you why. That tactical grew, what, over 80%? I think that's because we've been focusing on it. Every call, every quarter, you guys talk about what you're doing. Our board members are getting involved. But from the consumer standpoint, and it was almost a joke at the shareholder meeting, our board is out of touch with the consumer, okay? Let me promise you that as a hedge fund manager and as a I don't like to admit it, but apparently I'm a millennial, although I don't feel like one. I am in touch with the consumer, and the consumer wants to buy something that is cool, okay? Now, I have a very easy solution, very easy, painless solution. Our SG&A, if you take like 2% of that, like I'm talking about less than $25,000, we already own more than 2% of the stock. Let me help you spend 2%. Let me help you direct towards product placement and give me 90 days to move the needle. And if I and my partners don't move the needle, then I will bow out. That's what I have to. So I'm asking you to do all of us a favor. What do you think, John? You know that we're friends. We're on the same team here.
Oh, yeah. No, Vijay, let's do this so we can wrap up. I'll set up a conference call with yourself, David Happy, and myself to kind of reengage where we were on actually what you talked about, becoming that inspiring brand, looking at the people that can help us make that happen to increase our social media and our e-commerce. As you eloquently stated, my recognition on the company that with the board's approval and help that we're able to do is transform the company from just brick and mortar into e-commerce. And now in order to engage those consumers, those millennials and below, right, you have to look at it very differently and looking at the investments into social media and e-commerce and in order to make sure you're speaking the language, which is a different language than somebody that's, post 45. So I commit to you that I'll have a conference call set up for you, myself and David next week. David will be in all next week because we'll have a big week of operations and shipping and making things happen before Black Friday. So with that, David, David's on the line, and David and I will follow up with you, Vijay, and come up with a strategy and a plan that we think will be effective. And I like your idea of kind of if it doesn't happen quick, then we bow out. But I think
exactly.
All the investors would be appreciative of that type of attitude.
Well, David, listen, I look forward to meeting you. I think you're just a stone's throw away. I'm in Orlando, and I think you might be in Tampa. Last question, guys, because sometimes it just takes a minor fix. What about Tiffany Blue? I was in Dick's Sporting Goods. My curiosity got the best of me. What's the best-selling pepper spray? Sabre's Tiffany Blue. When can we come out with just a Tiffany Blue mace? Girls,
well, we are. There's a couple initiatives that we're coming out with. And lastly, to close, like I think Vijay was talking about is we have hired a couple brand ambassadors, one of them being Evie Pamporis, who used to be a former Secret Service agent that is starting now to do some work for the company. She approached us because she loved the brand based on her skill set and her working with both, I believe, President Clinton, President Bush, and President Obama. She really felt the need for that empowerment. To Vijay's point, we do have a whole line of Tiffany Blue, but bigger than that, we have a line of purple products coming out, which we feel really is an empowerment. It is a stop domestic abuse color, which we are looking to get well behind into the early part of 2018. We're also working with our friends at NRA and Refuse to Be a Victim. So we have very many initiatives out there in order to make sure people know that MACE stands for empowerment. And if it doesn't say MACE on the label, it's just a can of pepper spray. So with that, I want to thank everybody for their participation. I apologize in advance. Jody has been lovely, and she's been very easy to deal with, and it wasn't her fault that they had some technical bridge issues with the phone lines, but these things do happen in our modern era. So with that, Jody, I'll turn it back to you, but I want to thank everybody on behalf of Carl Smith, John McVeigh, and David Happy that for your participation and your continued support of the company.
Thanks all.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.